Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for hearing House Bill 3114. And I will be brief because I know the committee has a lot of work to do. With me is Ted Orloff, and I will let him basically explain the objectives of the bill. But I might also include that Superintendent Stan Dunn is here with us, and he supports House Bill 3114. And he's giving me his consent. One of the things that House Bill 3114 does that we have not done in Oregon history, and that is include all of the diversity of Oregon. And I think it's a very positive step. As we develop our curriculum, it is an opportunity for us to be very, very inclusive of everyone who has made this state great. And with that, I will turn it to Chet.
Thank you. My name is Chet Orloff. I'm the director of the Oregon Historical Society. Thank you. Good morning, members of the committee. I promised the chairwoman that I would be very brief, so I will stick to that. This is a bill that I think takes us into the next millennium and the next century in terms of developing content standards for our schools, for our teachers and children, on not just Oregon history, but all of the other ramifications of history, civics, geography, economics, larger social studies, basically developing a sense of who we are as Oregonians. I think a very important thing as the state changes. And this also establishes an even more dynamic partnership between the Department of Education and the Oregon Historical Society, a more than century-old partnership. Superintendent Bunn and I have talked about this extensively and plan to get together as soon as session ends to begin work on this in earnest. And the Historical Society will be committing its efforts, fundraising efforts, and programmatic efforts to support the every intention of this bill. Thank you.
It's my understanding that financial appropriations been removed, and so this would be a voluntary cooperative effort between the Historical Society and the Department of Education within existing resources.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I'm sure. Mr. Joyner, perhaps is your vision that this course will become part of the required curriculum in some way in the schools?
Yes, it is.
And does the bill say that?
Yes, it does.
We'll develop content standards.
Senator Troy, if I might, Madam Chairwoman, members of the committee, over the next several years, the Department of Education is charged with developing content standards for SIMS and CAMS for social studies. And what we envision is that this part of the content standards will form a backbone, if you will, for the development of those SIMS and CAMS standards. So it will basically giving a
lot of course, a Carnegie course called Oregon Studies.
Right.
The office. They'll be within the as you prepare, you know, all the way through, first there'll be items that will be dealt with in Oregon history.
Correct. Okay. Correct. Okay. It will allow for a complete reassessment of how we teach Oregon history, civics.
I presume we already do some of that, don't we?
Yes, we do. We do, and it varies by district.
This will be an attempt to organize a curriculum K through 12 so that some things will be done early, some later. And we'll visit aspects of Oregon.
That's correct. Correct.
But you won't see a course like a history of Oregon that's taught at any point.
Well, that's a good question, Senator. I would answer that it's possible we will develop a stronger course in Oregon history. It's been more than 20 years since we wrote a textbook, which I was one of the co-authors on Oregon history. It's obviously time to redo that. Or do another one?
A new high school test?
It was a grade school, third, fourth, fifth grade test.
Any other questions?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning to Mr. Orloff and good representatives. I would say that we absolutely must do the history piece and up-to-date Oregon history that is inclusive, as Representative Winters has already pointed out to us. So I would just remind all of us who participated in the Day of Acknowledgement back in April, which was a remarkable day in the history of this state, which made the point that we are moving into the next century, and this is our opportunity to define who we want to be as a people, and to make sure that as we are telling the Oregon story, we are in fact telling the story of all of Oregon's people. And I think that's part of the intent of this initiative. That's how I've read it, and that's why I support it.
Thank you, Senator. That is, I would like to extend an invitation to all of you. We will be getting one in writing next Thursday at 4 o'clock. We'll be opening up the Oregon Folk Life and Folk Arts exhibit in the governor's office, which will illustrate for you what the diversity of Oregon is, what a diverse heritage is, with another program of the Historical Society.
Any other questions? Any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Only that I really do think it's time that we have an inclusive curriculum, that the great diversity of our state is well worth highlighting, and it's well worth knowing about. As most of you know, that I'm the president of the Oregon Orthodox Rite Pioneer, which has done some research in trying to make sure that history, as history exists in Oregon, is told and shared with students. I think it's important that our students know about all aspects of our life in our state. Whether we're living in metropolitan Portland area, whether we're living in rural Oregon, and it's through knowledge, as we know, that we're able to also to eliminate barriers in the future. So I was very honored to be a part of the group to bring forth this bill, House Bill 3114, and I would ask for your support and passion on for the House.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize for being late this morning again. It's that time of year, I guess. Just a question, and maybe we covered this earlier, is how does this differ from the standards we have for history in general? But now, again, that has been actually pulled back, as I understand it, because there's been some concern about the standards relative to generically history or social studies, I think, is the content. Is this then separate and distinct from that, or is this going to be integrated as part of that?
Integrated and representative, in other words. And basically what we'll be doing, I think, is strengthening our approach and broadening the support that teachers will have in terms of teacher training and teaching materials to include the Oregon Historical Society's programs and services, along with a partnership with the Department of Education.
Great. Thank you. I should probably say that my father is a history professor, and I would be remiss not to school him, so. Mr. Orloff knows quite well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We have some dash by the minutes which needs to be included in this.
Sure, let's hope that we don't begin the history of the peoples of this area with just the beginnings of Oregon as a state. We go back and have Native American background, almost 10,000 years of folks here, people here.
Senator Guerrero, we did, you will see that there's an amendment to this to where we include the Native Americans as a part of this.
Is there anybody else here to testify on 3114? Close the public hearing and open the work session on 3114. And
are you ready for a motion?
Right. She wants to go over the amendment. There are a couple things. In your packet, there are three key things. One, there is a staff or fourth staff member summary from the last committee. And then there is also a fiscal impact statement, which basically says that the standards probably will be incorporated in their normal process, but in preparation of materials, there may be costs involved with that, and it's indeterminate. There are two amendments. There are the dash fours, which inserts on page 2, line 17, after county, it inserts tribal. And then there are the dash 5 amendments, which basically takes out the appropriation clause in the bill.
Okay. Any questions? Councilman Ross?
Have you had conversations with the Department of Ed about how they anticipate assuming everything is fully staffed and what other, what would be the responsibility that they would have?
Representative Ross, are you referring to financial responsibility?
Well, I'm just referring to the fact that, if we give them a task, they've got to do it. And have you had discussions with them about how they would do it?
My understanding is that the Department of Education is supportive of this bill and they understand the need.
Thank you.
I'm sure.
Sure.
Could we hear from the superintendent about this?
Right now.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dan Bunn, Superintendent of Public Instruction. And we do support this bill and believe that it has very strong value for the state of Oregon. You've heard me say many times before this committee we're short of dollars and we have many needs, but we believe in working with the Historical Society that we can truly partner to make an effective integration of these materials and this information into our curriculum activity. They've also committed to work with us on the funding issue and help with that.
Generally, we give to the Board of Education responsibility to look over the curriculum and determine what's in the curriculum, and we try not to, at state level, to mandate curriculum. So I think it's a good policy generally. State Board okay with this?
We work with the State Board regularly on all issues, and we would bring this to the State Board for their approval of the integration content so that they could say, if they wanted to at that time, we'd like to see revision or clarification.
My guess is that they would really want to.
That would be my belief.
My memory fails me. Do teachers come in from other states? Are they required to take any courses in Oregon history or government?
No, I'm not sure. I don't know the answer.
I know that the state of Washington does require that. I just wanted to see that.
I don't know. As far as we know, there's not a current requirement.
Well, it might be that as you develop new materials and as you get something together, you may want to either on a voluntary basis apply new teachers' information or do something that in connection with certifying teachers from out of state, because I think that our teachers who teach our children in the state need to be knowledgeable about this. If you develop new materials, that may be an opportunity to do this.
We'll note that and work with that.
Thank you very much.
I'm sure. Just at the higher education level, I'm not too sure how many institutions really offer a good background of courses. Oregon State has some courses that would work, and I think they're well taught, but I don't think everybody goes into teaching and takes those courses.
I think one of the things over time we need to do, Madam Chair and Senator Trowe, is look at what the higher education opportunities are and attempt in our professional development efforts to sort of meld together the strongest partnership there.
Any other questions? Thank you, Senator. Are you ready for a motion?
Madam Chair, I move the dash 4 amendments to House Bill 3114.
Senator Gordon, I move the dash 4 amendments. Any discussion? Any objections? Motion carries.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 5 amendments to House Bill 3114.
Senator Gordon, I move the dash 5 amendments to 3114. Any objections? Motion carries.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3114 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee.
Senator Gordon moves the amended version of House Bill 3114 to the full committee with due pass recommendations. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, just to note that I'm usually pretty cautious about unfunded mandates, and this is something that we're asking the Department of Ed and the Historical Society to have funding. I think it's worthy and it's important, but I think we always have to recognize that things that are done with no funding cannot be done at the same level as if we make appropriations. So it's just that's a comment.
There is a contribution being made by Corpus.
Who?
Tribal. And I'm making a substantial contribution to help fund this. Not really much. All right. Any other discussion? Any objections? Motion carries. Becky, do you want to carry this on the floor?
Thank you.
Winners, I'm sorry. Senator Ross, can you carry this on the floor?
Sure.
Senator Gordon?
Yes.
All right. We'll close the public hearing on work session on 3114. And let's open the work session on House Bill 5014. Okay, we're going to start with staff. Jump over.
Yeah.
I'll hold that one.
You have.
Well, I might have.
Yeah. Open the public picture.
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, on Wednesday of last week, you approved the department's operations, youth corrections education program, and special schools budget for the Department of Education. What we have left to do today is to go over some debt service and some one-time funding issues. And what I've done for you is last Wednesday I distributed to you a spreadsheet, a four-page spreadsheet, and I've recreated that for you, plus added page 5, which will cover the debt service and the one-time funding. So if you can go directly to page 5. And what you'll see there is, as on the other spreadsheets,
Madam Chair, I apologize. I don't think I was in committee on Wednesday, and so what did we in fact do on Wednesday?
Madam Chair and Representative Ross, the committee approved the legislative fiscal office's recommendations for department operations, the special schools, and the youth corrections education program. And
as laid out in the spreadsheet.
That's correct. And notes with one exception, which we can do today.
What do we do about assessment centers?
Madam Chair and Senator Trowe, you adopted or you approved the LFO recommendations, which is to deduct that policy package from the budget, but reserve $1 million in the emergency fund for the department and have them come back and report on the status of implementing the assessment system.
The idea, Madam Chair, that with the $1 million that the emergency board would have supervision over, that there would be some pilot projects established, assessment centers, is that?
We're given a flexibility, knowing that that's not enough. I think understanding that that's not enough to implement the assessment, they can use that.
Are they to look for alternatives to assessment centers, or may they do it?
To continue, on page 5, it's a two-sided spreadsheet, as the other ones are, and the top of the front side just gives you some history of this area of one-time funding and debt service. And then in the middle of the page, we'll start with the development of 9901 governor's recommended budget. And the 97-99 legislatively adopted budget was $204,411,111, and that includes $50 million in general funds for one-time classroom needs. That money was distributed to schools on a per-student basis. In the other funds column, that includes $150 million in lottery bond proceeds from lottery revenue bonds that were issued in spring of 1999, also distributed on a per-student basis. The $4,411,111 has to do with bond issuance costs. The budget then is adjusted for the debt service costs on that bond issuance. And because the bonds weren't issued until spring of 1999, there was no debt service in the 97-99 budget, but you're seeing it now for the 99-01 budget. And what's in the governor's budget for debt service is $31,629,855.
And, Chair, is that a sufficient amount? Is that more than we need or less or what? No?
Madam Chair and Senator Trow, I'll get to that in more detail, but yes, it is sufficient. It is actually based on an actual debt service schedule that is now in place as a result of the bond issuance.
It's not more than sufficient. It's just sufficient.
Senator Trow, it's slightly more than sufficient, and you see I've got an adjustment to the budget as a result. In the essential packages section, you'll see the phase-out then of those one-time costs of the $50 million for the classroom and then the $150 million in lottery bond proceeds. So what that brings you down to is the current service level, which is essentially the debt service for the lottery bonds, and then there is $10,000 in there for a bond trustee fee, and that's for a subsequent issuance of bonds that's in the governor's recommended budget. Then in the policy packages section, you'll see three policy packages. Policy package number 495 is for the bond issuance cost of $50 million that you'll see in policy package 496. And that $50 million is for the technology project. And the governor's budget does not include any debt service for those bonds, so it's assumed that under his budget that they would be issued late in the biennium, and the debt service costs would start in 2103. And then finally, package 497 is $20 million in general fund, and that's for what are known as distress schools. Those are schools that have multiple barriers to educating students in terms of cost. They may have a high proportion of students that come from low socioeconomic backgrounds, students that have that are in families with multiple languages, maybe schools that have high infrastructure needs. And the idea there is that the schools that would get these funds would have a combination of these criteria and would be at the far end of the spectrum in terms of their needs to overcome some of these barriers. And the criteria would be set by the State Board of Education and the schools would apply to the funds.
Madam Chair,
Ms. Gordon?
Just an observation that the districts that would fit or the schools that would fit this category also have students that could have benefited from the assessment centers had we chosen to fund those assessment centers. And I think one of the questions that we have not answered for ourselves is, without the assessment centers, then what options exist at the district level for those students who will still need some support, still need some services. So I appreciate that the distress schools fund is here, but I see it related to the assessment centers. And I may be wrong about that, but I do see that connection.
Madam Chair, sure. Do we have the superintendent tell us how he envisions using the assessment fund? Is that going to stay in the budget?
No. No. No.
It's not.
But I think we do need to have the discussion on the record. I do. I think we do need to have that conversation on the record so we know what we're losing.
No, complete your presentation and then we'll have
I do have a question for staff. I was noticing in the 495, the bond issuance cost, and that does stay in your recommendation, 495, although the number is reduced. What is that for? I thought that was associated with the $50 million.
Representative Edwards, it is, and if you'll allow me to
proceed,
I can cover that for you. If you turn the page over, then you'll see the section for the LFO recommended budget, and that starts with the governor's recommended budget. The first line item under adjustments is to adjust the debt service adjust the debt service to the debt service schedule, and also to adjust it for anticipation of a new bond issuance. And what that does is it adjusts. First of all, the $31,629,855 that I mentioned earlier as debt service in the governor's budget on the $150 million lottery bond issuance to the actual amount per the debt service schedule, which is now in place. And that actual amount is $30,781,120, so there's about an $800,000 difference there.
Where are you?
And that $30,781,120 includes $14,660,000 in principal reduction and $16,121,120 in interest payment. That line also adds $10.9 million for estimated debt service in 1999-01 on $100 million of new lottery bonds. And that issuance is assumed in the legislative budget. And the source of funds for the debt service for both these issuances include the excess 1997-99 state school fund over the legislatively set cap. And as you'll recall, that was something that was set the structure, and it was directed that if there were an excess, that it be used to pay this debt service. And there's about $38 million in excess state school fund that's anticipated, although that is not a certain number, and it won't be certified until May of 2000. There are also interest earnings on the Education Endowment Fund available for debt service, and the legislative fiscal office has requested those as lottery funds so that we can track lottery funds and interest on those lottery funds as well. And another source of payment for the debt service includes interest earnings on the education lottery bond fund and the bond fund reserve. The legislative fiscal office recommends that you approve an allocation of $2,313,000 lottery funds in anticipation that the excess state school fund may not materialize in total. That's just to give something of a cushion. And then we also recommend that the education subcommittee request the Department of Administrative Services to unschedule the $2,313,000 in lottery funds expenditure limitation pending a joint report from the Department of Administrative Services and the Department of Education on the realization of the projected sources of funding for debt service and then the need for the additional lottery funds, if any. And this report should be made in June 2000, which would be after the Legislative Revenue Officer certifies the excess from the 1997-99 state school fund. The next line item is to adjust the policy option package 495 for the new $100 million lottery bond issuance, and it's estimated that the bond issuance cost for that will be $2,644,490. So what it's simply done there is added the difference between that amount and then the amount that's in that package in the governor's recommended budget. So if you add that $1.2 million there to the governor's 1.4 roughly, you get the amount that you need for that $100 million issuance for its bond issuance cost. And then the next line item, policy option package 496, the school technology bonds. What I'm recommending is that you delete that package for a couple of reasons. Number one, Senate Bill 622 has in it now a provision to distribute $50 million to the schools for technology projects, and so this would be a redundant package. If that were to not go through, then it's possible that you would want to reconsider this package, but what I would recommend is that you do that when you when you consider House Bill 5018, so all the school funding items are in that one bill. And then finally, the last item is to deduct Policy Option Package 497 for the Distressed Schools Fund, primarily due to general fund constraints. So that would bring you to a total budget of $5,444,635 in lottery funds, $38,852,975 in other funds, for a total of $44,297,610 in total funds.
Any questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Eppert.
A few questions. I guess, so I'm clear on this, just on the line item, the 495, the bond issuance cost, you're anticipating that we would issue potentially $101 million in bonds, which would show up where? I mean, would that ultimately show up in 5018?
That's correct.
Okay. And why would we put the, so technically you need to put the debt service or the issuance cost, insurance issuance cost here, even though they don't have the authority. So let's just say the $100 million doesn't happen. Does this disappear? Or some other figure smaller than this, would it be adjusted? And if so, it would be adjusted in 2018?
Representative Edwards, if the $100 million in bonds, if that were not to be approved, then yes, we wouldn't have a need for the bond issuance cost, and they simply would use it.
Okay. And then just also the fact is you're also setting up a reserve for them. Right, correct, the $2.3 million, which is a separate number, to have that cushion, in which case, again, if it isn't used in any way, then what happens to that money after the reporting? Does it just go back to the general fund, the lottery fund? Lottery money, I believe, right? Yeah.
That's correct, Representative Edwards. If after they report to the emergency board, if that $2.3 million in lottery funds is not needed for them to pay the debt service, then it would be available for other projects, for other agencies, presumably.
Do we know, one last question, do you have any indication of what the $100 million is in lottery bonds? I mean, is that...
Purpose?
Or yeah, is that going to be similar to what was done with the $150 from the last one?
Representative Edwards, I don't have a lot of detail on that. It's my understanding that it's similar to... the governor's $100 million for school improvements. It would be along those lines. So those types of projects that would help students reach educational goals, that kind of thing.
Right. Just to point out that, again, it would be interesting to know what that looks like, because there are limitations to what you can use lottery bonds for versus money. I mean, that's why last session we put a box around what the lottery bonds could be used for, mostly capital. This needs $100 million, if I recall, had other things other than like classified reduction, which would be buying a teacher perhaps, which wouldn't necessarily fall under this $100 million. But I'd just, at some point, be interested to see what maybe that debate would be when we have like 58.
I believe that's the case.
Okay, thank you.
Additionally, on page 5, you said we have the $31 million for the debt service base, debt service adjustment. Did that, and you said that is allocated on the debt service schedule and so forth. Did that take all the money that wasn't available? Or was there extra money there on that?
Representative Ross, to clarify, when you say all the money that was available, do you mean the excess
yeah.
state school fund? there's approximately $38 million. It's anticipated that there'll be approximately $38 million available from the 97-99 state school fund. So it's more than sufficient to cover what's needed.
And so, so what happens to the difference between the 31 and the 38?
The new issuance, the $100 million, in total what's needed is over $40 million for debt service. So that, in combination with interest earnings on the endowment fund and some other interest earnings, and if necessary, the lottery allocation, would satisfy the debt service needs for
9901. Thank you.
Well, I would just remind us, and I have to remind myself too, because I've been guilty of this, but when you use bonding to help finance the schools, this is not a very cost-effective way to do it, especially when you have tax monies in which you don't have to pay all the overtime and the debt service is so expensive, and we even have tobacco monies that we could use, and we wouldn't have this tremendous cost of debt service that we're going to have, and it's not a cost-effective way to do it, and when you have other resources available that you won't use.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Stan Bunn, Superintendent of Public Instruction, and I would be glad to come back and vote on some of the budgets. I have a couple of ideas there. Thank you for the opportunity to comment briefly, and we will make our comments brief. We had asked that our budget be removed from consideration on Tuesday for three main reasons. First, we wanted to have a couple of days to see whether we could make any additional suggestions on cost cutting. Second, we wanted to look at the budget notes and some emergency board proposals that we were opposed to and see if we could move to support of those. And then finally visit with the governor and internally in the department to see if there was another approach we could use to several of these things. We were able to do two of the three of those, so I just want to report back on those. We are in support of the budget notes that we previously indicated we had problems with. I will say that at the time we met earlier that the question of review of Eddie Eagle programs in schools was not completed, and we would prefer to see that a broader review of violence prevention than just Eddie Eagle, but certainly we can do what is requested in that budget note. Second, we had originally opposed the idea of putting the $1 million for assessment in the emergency board. We no longer oppose that. And I want to say that having moved earlier from $8 million for assessment to $6.1 million for assessment, we now believe that we could do assessment with some scaled down effort for $5 million, and we wanted to report that to the committee. I would suggest this, both myself as superintendent.
And so that would be $4 million more than it's
currently. That's correct. Both myself as superintendent and the governor, while I see and I believe the governor sees real progress in this budget, we both have very strong concerns about the shortage of dollars for assessment, about the lack of dollars for the model and the database project. I have concerns about one of the FTE not being funded and a reduction in the communications portion, as the governor does also. The governor has continued to express his finding this budget as unacceptable at the present time. And as you all know, the assessment piece is in the negotiating that's going on between Republicans and Democrats in the legislature and the governor. It is my very strong hope, frankly, that negotiations will result in resolutions which would allow, when this budget reaches the governor, that it would be acceptable. And frankly, my hope is that through some other mechanism or other relating clause that we are able to take care of the assessment. And I will continue to work with you, legislators and the governor, try to find resolution of those issues before this budget would reach his desk. And I just want you to know that that's an ongoing effort that I intend to be a part of. With that, I would be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Maybe Senator Gordley would want to address the question, but since we're not going to be able to do the distress school part of this, so what sort of things can't we do that we were going to do if we'd have the 20 million?
The sorts of things that we cannot do? There are, among the other things that would happen with distress schools, interventions, support systems, training and professional development efforts, special attention to students, a whole series of things that connect students, help prevent dropout, really allow those schools to sort of move up by bootstrapping that simply aren't available. And are not there, would not be in place. We often have a process of rewarding our very best schools and continuing to deny funds to those that are in trouble when all evidence shows that if you properly fund and assist schools that are in trouble, they have a tremendous response to that. So I think this was a very positive attempt at saying we need to recognize that schools are having problems and need assistance.
Madam Chair. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Was I incorrect in seeing the relationship between assessment centers and the distressed school fund and how that fund would have been utilized?
I think there is an absolute connection. Many of the things we do have direct connections. For example, the efforts we're making on reading have direct connections to dropout issues. The assessment centers that are local in nature that give remediation, immediate help to students, help most, I believe, in distressed school situations. So I think there is a direct link, even though they're seen as separate issues.
The distress school fund is something that I hope still is alive in this building because I think its original intent was to try to, again, as you're describing, address some issues that are out there that are really being, I think, driven on large part by the formula, which is creating some inequities in my mind, and I can say from my school district's perspective, there are problems, and as we see the debate in the building right now is about how much money we put in the pot, and then the second question is how you distribute it. And I believe the distress school fund was to try to get at some of those school districts, like Portland and others, and small even districts that have, I think some of the categories included poverty, high rates of poverty, to help some of the school districts that were having problems, in my mind, receiving additional resources through the formula. The formula wasn't reaching, so I'm distressed that the distress school fund isn't part of the package now, and hopefully that something like it will evolve as we get through these negotiations. And I guess I had to put that on the record because I still believe this is a concept that needs some discussion before we get out of this building.
My question is just a follow-up on that. If we don't do the distress school fund and the formula is lower so that the reference money flows through the formula, what do you think the impact on Portland will be?
I believe it'll be negative.
Any other questions? You want to go over the budget note?
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. Last Wednesday, we went over the budget notes and we approved budget note number 4, which is on the center page of the data page. And that is the budget note that would require the department to report to the 9901 Interim Legislative Committee to take on the number of schools using the Eddie Eagle Gun Safety Program. And Representative Edwards had propose some language that would modify that to include the phrase or any other stem safety program. So the decision before you is whether or not you want to adopt the budget note with that modification.
Any motion on the budget note?
Chair, if I read it, that should be a pretty short report. All I have to do is give you a number, and it says if available, the data. Possibly it is available, but it doesn't look like we a very long list. I think I would agree with the superintendent that we ought to know more than that, more than just whether or not this program is in school, but whether there are other efforts being made and so forth. So I think a better budget note rather than this limited one would be needed. Maybe the department would be willing to
Are you comfortable with this budget note, or do you want a broader?
Well, our preference would be a broader note. I might just ask Chris quickly to comment on what our capacity for sort of building that is, and that might help you make the decision.
Madam Chair, for the record, Chris Durham, Department of Education. Last week, Senator Gordley asked the question, does the department have information on school district efforts and costs and programs for violence prevention? We do not have a comprehensive report, but I'd like to point out that violence prevention is handled in a multitude of strategies that school districts from beginning at really in before school districts Head Start program. I think there would be a possibility there for some effort, special education funding in dealing with early antisocial behavior counseling could be considered a violence prevention, teaching social skills. And then there's one federal program, Title IV, which is Safe and Drug-Free Schools, which is about a little over $9 million, a rather small amount of money statewide. And districts have the opportunity of using those funds for alcohol abuse or violence prevention. And each of those districts report to us how they plan to spend their money. We haven't consolidated that into one report, but we have by district how they're using those funds, and many of them do for violence prevention. For us to collect total violence prevention program and cost data would be a rather large task in that it is so complex, and how you define what is violence prevention from the array of programs that I mentioned, if the note were to require us to report on total violence prevention, that would be a significant effort on our part to develop some definitions and so forth and report back. So I think we're suggesting that the gun control be broader than just the Eddie gun.
What if we just delete the Eddie Eagle language out of there? On the number of schools using gun safety programs, using gun safety programs, and just let us delete the Eddie Eagle.
That we would prefer that over focusing just on the one.
Madam Chair, then I think on the last sentence you got to say the report should also include if available on costs to the schools to implement their program or something. I don't that program
they're
I think represents.
They're done. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions for staff or Superintendent Dunn? Do we have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move to adopt budget note or as modified. So that it requests the department to gather information on gun safety programs.
Okay. Any questions? Any objections? Motion carries. Okay, please.
Madam Chair, next item of business would be a motion on what we covered on page 5 of the debt service.
Okay. Do you have a motion?
Sure, I move the recommendation as described by LFO on you want the whole?
Just on the debt service.
On the, as described regarding the debt service needs and the anticipated $100 million in bond issuance that may or may not happen.
Yes, thank you. Discussion?
Madam Chair, I'll be recorded as a no.
You want to call the roll? Or call the roll?
If you need a vote, I'll get it. No.
Aye.
Motion to move to the full recap.
Okay. Okay. Yes, and Madam Chair, how would you like that motion? Madam Chair, I move House Bill 5016 to the full Ways and Means Committee with a new pass recommendation.
Madam Chair, I'll be voting no for reasons that I've stated earlier, but briefly, this is an inadequate budget without the distressed school fund, and I am very, very troubled that we still don't have a resolution for the assessment center. Hopefully, those two pieces will be addressed before we go home.
Madam Chair, I'll be a no because I'm concerned about Portland. I do not think it's in this state's interest to let our Portland go down the drain. I think that it's bad for the entire state if we don't maintain quality in our educational system in our largest cities. And I think that if we're not going to put enough money through the formula, then we need to give Portland extra money so that they can meet their responsibilities and maintain their quality. I fully understand that a lot of other school districts in the state are distressed. I'm very sympathetic with small school districts. And so I would like for everybody to have more money. But if the choice of the legislature is not to put more money through the formula, then I think we have to give cash directly to Portland because it is not in the state's interest to allow our large city school system to deteriorate with the result that middle and upper class people go to private schools, the whole quality of the school system deteriorates, and we have less capacity to fight crime and poverty and the things that are endemic for cities, as well as meeting the needs of special education kids who flock to Portland because of the medical services there. I think that Portland has struggled. They've done a very good job. I think their new superintendent has come in and done a lot of cost containment activities, and we applaud him. And so I think it is time that if we're not going to put enough money through the formula, then we need to directly support the firm. And so I will be a no because this issue is still unaddressed.
Thank you, Representative.
Well, she stole my floor speech. And I too will be a no on this budget. There are lots of unfinished business in this building relative to this budget, and I wholeheartedly agree with the statements that my friend from Corvallis just made about Portland and generally the distressed school fund. The $100 million I made the motion and I supported that, I, you know, without really knowing what we're going to spend $100 million on, I think that's still again a negotiating item. The item of the using the database and the model, no, I'm pulling back money on that to me doesn't make any sense, and that's a small budget item here. We need to capitalize on the data collection that we're going to put out there. And I think at this time, just personally, I can't support this because of where we are in at the end of session negotiating big chunks of our budget relative to schools, and it does affect their operating budget. So at this point, I'm going to be a no.
Motion to House 5016 as amended, full committee recast recommendation. Clerk, could you call the roll?
No.
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Senator Gordy?
No.
Senator Nelson?
Aye.
Senator DeVos?
No.
Nope.
Aye.
Aye.
With that, we are adjourned. I just want to remind you that at 9 o'clock on Saturday, we have an AM meeting, and tomorrow after full committee.